Good evening and welcome to another episode of The Last Knock. Your friends in horror since 2013. And tonight, we're drinking the imitation Kool-Aid and adjusting our mentalities accordingly to get down and dirty on the subject of cults in horror. I am Johnny Numb, leading tonight's ritual, and joining me as always to assist is
Jesus Christmas. Billy Crash, the deprogrammer. I'm gonna save his ass. I'm going to save you, John. I'm going to save you, man.
Billy, I see the error of my ways. Billy, I'm here.
Eat some protein, Johnny. The brain cells will come back.
You know what? My girlfriend would agree with that, actually. A spoonful of peanut butter would help with that, yeah.
Dude, I want one now, and we're doing a stupid fucking show.
Just eat the peanut butter, Bill. Come on.
That would have been. I'm not drinking that Kool-Aid. How about peanut butter? Okay. There he is. He's down. Oh.
Is it on a chocolate cookie? Okay. Here we go.
Chocolate. Yay! It's a food group.
Hey, ketchup is. In any case, yeah. Tonight we are talking about cults in horror, not to be confused with cult movies in the sense of, hey, that's a cult movie.
Absolutely.
Because it has only a few people who ostensibly watch it. We're talking about the actual cults in terms of, well, what drives people to do what they do based on what they believe.
Well, here's the definition.
Go ahead.
Cult is a system of religious veneration and devotion directed toward a particular figure or object. It's also a relatively small group of people having religious beliefs or practices regarded by others as strange or sinister,
mm-hmm.
and a misplaced or excessive admiration for a particular person or thing, like cultish behavior.
Yeah. And I mean, that does fit the definition of someone who would be following a cult classic or something like that. But mm-hmm. and there's certainly that sort of deification that goes on of specific movies.
Defecation? What?
Well, you know, Bill, that's later in the ritual.
That's
so.
Later in the ritual. Oh, man. Shit cult.
That's Twitter, Bill. Come on.
Oh, Twitter fucking sucks. Hey, Twitter, you know, I'm pulling a Lloyd Kaufman now, and I could do it.
Well, go ahead.
It's like, Twitter, what the hell are you doing? What the hell is this new Twitter crap? It's crap. It sucks.
You know, I don't have much of a problem with it. You know, I'm kind of okay.
Yeah, because you're in the cult.
Well, here's the thing, Bill. This is a nice segue. What do you think about the notion of social media, and especially a place like Twitter or even Instagram, where Instagram is like you have your people who label themselves as
influencers.
Give me the Kool-Aid. Yes. And they have a lot of followers who will, you know, devote attention, time, likes, comments. I mean, the same with Twitter, more or less. It's like, I feel like Twitter in its own way is a bit of a cult in and of itself, in if we're going by the definition in a way. It's like, well, each person, no matter how small your following is on Twitter, what does that constitute? I mean, what does a following constitute? And especially more high-profile people who have just a succession of people who kind of fall into line, reiterating or just simply agreeing with the sentiments being expressed.
Yeah, I know. I think it's interesting that, you know, when you're on Twitter, you know, people follow you and you follow them, and
mm-hmm.
it's not, and I think they wanted to get away from the friending, you know, and so they could differentiate themselves from Facebook.
Sure.
But it can have that connotation. And I am sure that they sat around in a room and talked about it ad nauseum for at least a couple of months about what they were going to call, you know, well, you are following them. What if it's like a cult, but you are following them? So it's like, you know, okay, man, you know. Yeah, I mean, I'm blessed, I guess. No, I'm very happy. I have 91,000 followers on Twitter, and I follow, like, I don't know, 85,000 others. And and it's great. I've met excellent people. I mean, I'm not in a cult. It's not a crash cult. I'm not leading people in a cult. If I was, I'd be like, send me money, man, now, like, please. And you could drink all, you could do whatever the fuck you want. Just send me money. But you know, I don't do that. It's just, but there are people, like, you know, so, like, influencers. Like, who says you're an influencer? Like, you know, where did that come from? Like, I don't know. It's just weirdness. Everything develops its own weirdness, man, and that's part of the problem, you know.
And I think that's kind of like why, and I'm not slagging on Twitter because I spend so much time on it, but I just am kind of tuned into, I feel like the behaviors I notice among other accounts, kind of. And it's like, yeah, it's, is it really a conversation if it's like 500 comments on a tweet and they're all pretty much variations on the same
theme?
On the same thing, yeah. And what is the intention with that? You know, people with the blue check marks, like, you know, Ariana Grande is probably not following too many of the people who follow her, you know, if I had to take a wild guess.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like, well, what are these people hoping to get out of it? It's almost like that fan culture where it's like, oh, maybe if I hold up this sign at a concert, I'll be acknowledged in some way or something like that. But it's usually not that, I feel, unless you say something really out of line to provoke a response, then you'll get your 15 seconds of fame on a quote tweet or something like that. But
yeah. And, just so people know at home, at this recording on July 30th is when we're doing this show, Ariana Grande has 64.4 million followers on Twitter, and surprisingly, she's following 61,800.
Oh, okay. All right.
So that's pretty cool.
All right, never mind. Sorry, Miss Grande. That's a lot more than I expected, because usually when you have a follower count that high, it's usually some people have only like a couple dozen, some people have a few hundred, and that's pretty low. So, but then it's like, well, is that an employment of power, kind of? Like, well, I can choose who I want to follow back, and that'll almost make it more enticing for people to want to seek my favor in a way.
Yeah, exactly.
Or approval or whatever, yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess the whole roundabout point is like is demonstrating kind of the cult-like mentalities that kind of exist in our midst and that we ourselves actively participate in, whether we acknowledge it or not, or whether I'm reaching far with that. So
yeah, I know what you mean, man.
But Bill, what do you think in terms of like tropes? Let's get back to the horror genre here, as is our lot. Yeah.
Yeah, cults and horror movies definitely go towards the sinister. I don't think there's any surprise there.
Right.
And I mean, what's creepier than walking into a town or going on an island like The Wicker Man, or going into a town where Children of the Corn, you know, come out, and it's like, oh man, they're all in this together, and they all have one main purpose, and there's a leader of this group, and everybody else is protecting that leader. It's like, you're just so screwed, you know. It's like, what are you gonna do?
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
How do we get out of this? Probably not. You know, it's like, you know, like, it's probably not gonna happen. So it's very frightening on its own that people have a sinister agenda and they're in a group. And they're all part of it. And there's been many horror movies where it's like an entire town is a cult, you know, and it's like, and you're just beat. you know, there's nothing you could do. You're already beaten.
What do you think of like how cults are represented? I mean, and I was in doing my quote unquote research, I was subdividing the types of cults I was finding in some of these movies, actually, because I was like, yeah, they don't all fit under the same umbrella per se. You could easily just say, oh yes, in a general umbrella sense, they're all cults, but they're not all working toward the same cause or the same belief, basically. Now, what do you think about presentation in horror, Bill, as far as a cult's concerned? Is a certain presentation of cult-like behavior get to you more than another, per se? Like, for instance, the kind of Courtney Gaines in Children of the Corn is kind of notorious because his performance is so over the top, you know.
Yeah, Malachi, that little shit.
Yeah, Isaac, I guess.
Yeah,
John Franklin is the more like subdued,
right?
Subdued character. But then you have other movies where the characters are much calmer and a little less, a little more unassuming in their actions and.
But still, we know. Like, I mean, I was thinking, is like, is there such a thing as a good cult?
Oh, okay.
You know, and I'm like, no, but, you know, people need to realize, you know, you're going back when Christianity began, it was a cult and it was looked upon as sinister by the Roman Empire, you know, and it was like, now they're not a cult. They're a major organized religion. But like every major religion, you know, at one point was an idea from someone.
Mm-hmm.
A small group, and it expanded, you know, and it's like they were cult. It was a cult, and then it went on. And
right.
So, and then you have, you know, those people who are, you know, at the top, they're manipulating their followers, they're manipulating, you know, religion and or politics and using them as weapons and means to exploit others. So, you know, like almost every cult movie, and there's some I do like, but I usually hate them. I hate them mm-hmm. because it's like, well, how different is this going to be from the last thing?
Sure.
There's a leader. He's usually a he. Usually a wing nut, whether they're presenting themselves as not being one or not.
Yeah.
They have these mindless followers that are like, yes, you know, yes, daddy, you know, whatever, you know, some weird shit. And I think like the cult movies I like the most are the fledgling little cults. And it's like, man, if we do this shit for Satan, man, we're in. You know, like crap like that. Like The Babysitter.
Okay, yeah. That's a good one, Bill. Yeah.
Yeah, thanks. That came out on Netflix like a year ago. Samara Weaving starred, and my God, is she hyper fucking delicious. And
yeah.
The movie's a blast. It's a lot of fun. It's really cool. It has great shifts and turns in it. But you know, it's a group of people that want to be something more as their little group. And so it's interesting, you know, at that point, you know, looking at them, you can't necessarily say, well, they're a cult yet, but that's what they're working on. You know, it's like, because I heard the pay's good, you know, so.
Doing the rituals and yep. working towards that goal, kind of. I kind of like in that movie how there's sort of infighting and all this stuff that kind of contributes to the downfall, which could also be the fact that, you know, they're teenagers as well, or young adults, so they're kind of like not the greatest when it comes to mitigating conflict either, so.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, absolutely. I don't know. I was trying to look at those movies in the cult subgenre that I enjoy and why, and it's either because they're hyper disturbing, like The Sacrament, which I know you enjoy as well.
Yeah.
And The Ritual, which I thought, you know, had a better ending than the novel, but
I agree. Yeah.
Yeah, it's great though because, you know, you have this group of people. It's a village.
Mm-hmm.
And they have their local regional god to appease, you know. So it's funny because they're not a cult because they want to be. It's out of necessity.
Yeah. It,
you know, because there's a God there, and it's like, well, we're not part of his cult. We're dead, you know? So so I enjoyed that very much. And I think Mandy was great for having that fledgling little cult in it.
Holy fuck, man. How did I not think of that one? Okay, yeah.
You know,
great,
I thought,
great cult movie, yeah.
Yeah, it's a guy who wants to be a cult leader, and he sort of is, and he's sort of, like, not. You know, it's like, but I want to be a cult leader, you know? It's like, I really thought that was cool.
Yeah.
And, but you know what? It just reminded me, like in The Ritual, you had that, you know, local thing going on. You had the same thing in Jugface.
Yes, yeah.
You know, which I thought was really cool. Am I giving away, like, every movie or, like...
No, some of these I didn't write down, so keep going, yeah.
No, but I thought it was really cool that you have this small group, and it's like, this is the way we survive around here, because we really don't have a choice. We have to do mm-hmm. it this way. Although it led to... The interesting thing with Jugface and Ritual is you have this group of people, okay, there's something going on in our area that we must appease or we will mm-hmm. die. Therefore, yeah. what we have to do goes above all laws, all other laws.
Mm-hmm.
So they see themselves as a special group beyond that, even though they're subjugated in a way. And it's like, well, if you enter our kingdom, man, you're fucked. And I think that's a really interesting dynamic.
Well, and this also brings up something interesting on top of all that, Bill, in terms of location and geography. A lot of these movies exist in isolated places.
Exactly.
Where mankind is, you know, quote unquote, civilization is pushed aside. Like The Ritual is a great example where they're walking through the woods, basically, in Sweden, I think.
The remote region in Sweden where it's like a lot of people haven't really tread at all. There's no trails. There's nothing. The Sacrament, you know, he has his place in the middle of freaking nowhere in like...
I think it's South America.
Yeah,
somewhere.
South American jungle, you know. But then you have people hiding in plain sight in a dance studio in Suspiria.
Yeah, right.
You know, which is really cool because it's like, well, this is different, and that's part of the reason why it works. We're a dance academy. Welcome. Yay, I'm here to learn how to dance and much more, you know, and you don't even expect it. So I like Suspiria, the remake. Original to me is just a joke. You know, for that, it's great. It's in the middle of the city, and it's respected.
Yeah.
And no one knows it's a cult, you know?
Well, here's the thing I like about that, not to interrupt quick, Bill.
No, I don't care.
But I like how the witches in that film have such tremendous power that when the two pathetic cops come in to, we're investigating this missing person, there's literally a scene where the witches are taunting them and making them pull down their pants in a back room.
Exactly.
because it's a joke to them. They have those men have no power over them. They're impotent.
And that was beautiful with the pulling your pants down because you've got nothing to show me.
We're gonna tease that shriveled little thing. Yeah,
the one cool one that I really enjoyed a lot that I don't think a lot of people even looked at was a movie called The Shrine, starring Mr. Ashmore, many moons ago, where it's like, yep, this is our region, yep, this is our area, but it wasn't necessarily the cult people thought it was, which I thought was really cool. They did a twist on that.
Oh, okay.
But did you see The Apostle?
I haven't seen it. No,
man.
I've heard it's good. No, you can talk.
It's really damn good. And it, again, mm-hmm. About that whole element of subjugation and, you know, it's like, yeah, well, this is wrong if we hurt these people. But if we don't, we're all going to suffer because we have to appease this regional beast. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's cool. But again, you know, movies like this have the same dynamic where there's, you know, a group of people, you can't trust them. But what if you can? Little Jimmy's a nice boy. He, you know, and it's like, oh, come on. Then you have the Wicker Man, you know, and it's like,
Right.
You know, it's like, what are you going to do different in a cult-based, a foundation for a cult-based movie with like Devil's Reign, that was a cult movie too, and all, and
yeah,
you know, the Mephisto Waltz and all of that shit. And it's like, well, you know, what are you going to do?
Are you saying? Are you saying
different? That's different for me as a viewer. What are you going to do? That's different, because after a while, those stories, it's like it's the same thing. It's just a little bit different.
Yeah, I was going to say, Bill, you're saying they're redundant. What you can do with the premise of just a cult is can be limited.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes, like you were just saying, it turns to the obvious, which is Satan, you know, or conjuring something, you know, not the Conjuring, but conjuring something.
Did you see the movie Black Death?
A long time ago, yeah.
Yeah, it just popped into my head.
Sure.
How, you know, this kid, you know, he's going on this witch hunt for real, and, you know, things happen to him. You know, you could say he's got PTSD and all of that stuff. And then he becomes sort of like a cult leader at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was really interesting to watch that transformation. And, like, he's leading these people, and he's telling them, you know, like, this is what we need to do. This is where we're going. And it's like, but he's becoming a monster. What is he? What has he become? What is he? What will he continue to create, and will he continue to just hurt people? And yeah. I thought that was really interesting. I guess I'd like to see maybe, I don't know, something, a movie that's different, like a pre-cult movie, like before it becomes a cult. Or what if you have a group of people, they want to do something really good and it looks great, and then you realize as you're watching, shit, they're becoming a cult, you know, and it's like, and then things start to go bad. I'd like to see some twists on the subgenre like that, instead of like, oh, get ready to be scared, they're going in to drive it into a town and they're all cult members. Ooh, like, fuck you, man. You know, like, come on. Cabin in the Cult Woods. Oh, come on. We've seen this. Come on.
You know, Bill, there's an interesting movie. It's not, at least last time I looked, it wasn't labeled as a horror film, but it's called The Childhood of a Leader.
Yeah, I haven't seen that yet. That's on my list.
Yeah, and it's essentially Hitler, a series of vignettes about this little boy who is the son of an American politician up in the high ranks of government in the military, actually, who's they're making decisions. It's a period piece that takes place either during World War I or World War II, I can't remember, but it's essentially following this little kid as he becomes creepier and creepier and more manipulative and sociopathic, until he kind of ascends to that position of being one of those grand manipulators, kind of, you know, politically. So it's not quite the same as a cult, unless you kind of view political parties as a cult, which, hey, you could even...
Oh, absolutely. Cult of personality, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, and then that's its own sort of cult. So,
well, it is a cult. I mean, in our country, we have one side pointing at the other and going, "You're part of a herd." It's like, you guys, listening to yourselves yet? You know, it's like, what the hell?
Yeah,
you know?
No shit, Sherlock. Yeah,
But you made me think of something else while you were talking there, Johnny. I forgot what it was, but it was good. It was good. It was good in my head, and it's gone.
Well, maybe it'll come back to you, Bill. I got two little observations here, though.
I want to hear them.
In regard to satanic cults, two satanic cult films in particular, Rosemary's Baby, which is kind of a gimme. It's an obvious one, and also The House of the Devil.
I knew that was coming up.
Which. Ty West film, who did The Sacrament.
Yep.
And something I thought was interesting about these two movies when I was thinking about them is that Rosemary's Baby, the title doesn't tell you anything really about what's gonna happen, except, hey, Rosemary's gonna have a baby at some point. Whereas The House of the Devil is kind of deliberately in your face with that title. But Ty West takes the approach of he builds and builds that movie to the point where it's like, what the, is he just killing time? He's watching the babysitter walk around and dance around the house, which is cool, but it's like, where's the tension? What's going on? And it's not until like the third act that you see, oh, okay, she was hired to babysit the spawn of the devil or whatever, or some horrible hell spawn. And what I think is interesting about those two movies is the cult aspect, while it's teased in moments, like peppered throughout, it's not really until near the end where those intentions are made kind of explicit.
Gotcha.
What would you say about that, Bill? Is that...
Yeah, no, no, that's quite accurate. No, that's excellent. I was just thinking of other movies in that same, you know, vein, so to speak, where they're almost like a cross between funny that I mentioned cross, yeah.
Yeah.
Cross between a cult and just minions laying a foundation for the coming of the devil, you know.
Yeah.
You know, you could even say in Prince of Darkness that the devil's creating his own mini cult of minions to so he can come out, which I think is pretty cool.
You know, Bill, that's a good call. Even in the film, Jameson Parker and his mustache, he says it's reaching out and influencing, and that's in the definition.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, you could look at it thematically as like, is that scientific group a cult of its own, a cult of intelligence, a cult of, you know...
Reason.
Yeah, belief. A cult of reason. Yeah. Wow.
Well, and then you have the influence of the homeless people outside, and then you have the kind of the dual influence, like the worms on the window, the ants.
Oh, yeah.
The ants in the TV, the homeless people, and gradually the liquid starts to reach out and influence the students and the teachers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But, that's what popped into my head. I think you're going to talk about it, though, at one point, so I'm not going to bring it up. I'll let you do it. But
oh, man. Put me in suspense, Bill.
All right, The Endless.
Oh, no, I wasn't going to bring it up. Go ahead. I didn't like it. So
no, I know, but I'm thinking like, what kind of cult was it? Was that a bad cult? Was that a good cult? Was that a we're not really sure what we are cult?
It was just a cult, man.
It was just a cult.
Come on the weekends, you know, you can leave when you want. Yeah, no, you can't.
A reserve cult.
Yeah.
I'm a weekend culter. Oh, that's great.
I was gonna say if your number gets pulled, you'll go to the actual cult. You can just hang out here for a while. Yeah.
Oh man.
Well, what about that cult, Bill? Do you think? You could talk about for the fact that I didn't like the film, it was still a unique approach in some ways to that concept.
Yeah, exactly, because you didn't really know what their intentions were necessarily. Was it bad? Like, you know, were they trying to do a group of people trying to understand something that they couldn't comprehend really? Or so were they actually innocuous? You know, I don't know. I think that's left up to the viewer because it's so, you know, there's a lot of open-endedness to the film. Which I do enjoy. I like the ambiguity.
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't know. I was just thinking, gee, is that like the only cult that might not be necessarily bad or all bad in a particular movie?
Yeah, you know, something that surprised me about that film was that the horror wasn't as pronounced as I expected it to be.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very unconventional approach to horror and sci-fi and even fantasy tropes, I'd say.
Yeah.
In that film. So I think on that level, like if you haven't seen it, despite what I'm saying, you probably owe it to yourself just to watch it, to say, you know, to experience it for what it is. But that's a good point, Bill.
Really?
Well, the approach to the approach to that is interesting, and Benson and Moorhead have a very unconventional approach to, mm-hmm. to genre, and that's one of the things that I think makes them interesting as filmmakers. So yeah,
it's just like if I was somewhere and I found out like there was cultish behavior going on, like I gotta leave, man, because I'm like more and more each day, I'm a fucking anarchist, you know, and it's like,
right.
I just hate fucking labels. You know, I've reached the point now where, I just tell people I'm a oxygen breathing carbon based life form, man. That's fucking it.
Yeah.
You know, so what group do you belong to? I don't. You know, I wouldn't even say I'm like, you know, punk rocker anymore, you know, it's like, or whatever. And when it comes to like, you know, sexual orientation and preferences and proclivities, it's like, I'm like, dude, I like sex, you know, I'm a guy, you know, like, and I'm not even a guy, I'm an oxygen breathing, you know, carbon based life form, you know, so.
Well, I think you're right, Bill, because, and this is something that could reflect negatively on people who just happen to have a different belief system or whatever, because I feel like you know, Wiccans or pagans or whatever often get lumped in as like, oh, they're satanic or something,
and
like
not.
That because people, and it's usually probably religious folk who are just plain down ignorant, who are like, oh well, that's not a religion. Well, no, but Christianity took all the parts of those, you know, they stripped those things for parts and turned them into their own mess of a thing. So yeah, I mean, it's like there is that sort of urge to generalize, I would say.
Yeah, and you know, and the things we don't understand, we label as and wrong and no and
yeah, what you don't understand though. Yeah, oh man, God forbid you read a fucking book. Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, speaking of that, I had to, you know, my second book I have a Wiccan character and I'm like, well, yeah. I want to get this fucking right, you know? And so it was really cool, not too far from where I live, about a few miles away, is Kathy Brown. She's a high priestess. She's mm-hmm. a Wiccan. She's the sweetest, most wonderful person you'll ever meet, kind, loving, giving, caring, blah, 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 you know, the whole nine yards. And it was just really wonderful to sit down with her and speak to her and learn from her. And it was wonderful. It's funny, most people that I know who are pagans or self-proclaimed pagans, because you don't have to be, not all pagans are Wiccans and not all Wiccans are pagan. And
yeah.
But like pagan people, it's like they like to ask questions. they don't judge, like they're being judged, like you're a pagan, you know, it's like, just, I don't know, pagan is not synonymous with Satanism. And yeah, people like, you know, LaVey Satanists, they don't even worship Satan, you know, and it's
yeah.
like, I think LaVey, you know, and I think LaVey would, yeah, I did it for the marketing, you know, and
right,
you know, but I don't know. I have no answers, but I know as soon as you form a group of something and people either don't get you, don't understand you, or fear you, then mm-hmm. you have some sort of weird power, and you could distance yourself if you want, or because you're the other, and
yeah.
you can and then you could start saying, well, we're better than them because, and then the next thing you know, you have the planet that we're living in. You know,
yeah,
like,
right,
you know what
right.
I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good call, Bill. And you know, just to piggyback off what you were saying about the Wiccan that you met and interviewed, there are numerous pagan-based and earth-based festivals around the area where I live, and mm-hmm. I've gone to a couple of them.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly because I have friends who are into that stuff, and also my girlfriend is kind of getting more and more interested in that as well. But I've gone to this stuff, and granted, it's not like it's not like the equivalent of a horror convention for me, like where it's, you know, but it's like it's an interesting experience because people are decent to each other, you know. There's
yeah.
no. There's no hostilities. There's no one there that I've ever encountered looking to fuck shit up, you know, because people are attending these things. And it's much more about, like, you know, what can people will talk about Earth, you know, environmentally conscious things. There'll be like speakers and stuff like that. There'll be music. There'll be, you know, locally made organic food and stuff like that. So it's just an extra bit of perspective, you know, and insight into other people's beliefs, but you at first you got to like get past the knee-jerk desire to say, I don't want to fucking go to that because I don't understand it. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, because you're taught, you know, once you're in one group, you're taught to fear or hate or dislike another one, even in subtle form, you know. Well, they don't worship like we do, and therefore they're not on the right path.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I've had it, you know. Nah, I can't get into that. Okay, fuck it, I don't care. There's a person I respect very much, a dear friend, an old friend, who is a Christian, and we've had phenomenal conversations. I am not a Christian. You could say at one point in my life I used to be when I was younger, but you know, I wrote a particular story about some of those pains that I had as questions that arose within me as a young person. And I was exploring them in this screenplay, and my friend read it, and he said, you know, I couldn't contact you right away because, you know, it was, you know, I had to digest it, but he was upset by a lot of it, which I didn't really want to do. And it wasn't that I was trashing Christianity. I was raising questions.
Sure.
And it was really interesting because at one point he said to me, and we did, we had a great conversation about it, you know, and at one point he said to me, you know, Bill, I'm worried about your soul. And on the one hand, I'm like, well, that's really sweet. And on the other hand, I'm like, well, can't I say to you, I'm worried about your mental state?
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, but he, could he ever, I think if I talked to him about it, you know, he'd probably say, yeah, I could see where you're coming from with that. But it's like, there's what, like over 5,000 religions in the world? You know, now we have the flying spaghetti monster, which was a great response from a professor. And that's, you know, if there's a God that's going to bring me spaghetti, probably with meatballs, I'd be like, yeah, I'll worship that. You know, and chocolate for dessert. Okay, good. I'm in. It's that simple. But, you know, and a lot of times it's hard for us and, you know, to take that step back from emotion and whatnot and just try and take a look at it from a whole different angle, you know, but and then you have a cult, and that's usually very different and select. You know, I don't know. There's Christian cults. There are groups that are offshoots of Christianity and do their own bizarro thing. Mm-hmm. And you'll have. I remember we had when I was teaching on a university, we had a loudmouth group come on, and they couldn't be driven off because it's a state school.
Okay, yeah.
And, you know, and we were all told, walk by them, don't say a thing. And meanwhile, they're disrupting classes and everything else. They're making sure. Students cry because they're pointing at them like a Muslim student. I remember, like, you're going to hell. And I'm like, I'm like, okay, great. And so I was really pissed all day, and I'm trying to lead by example and not get all punk rock and get a baseball bat and chase them across campus and lose my job and go to jail. But this one student came into my one class crying. She was crying, and she was like, I want to apologize to everybody. I'm a Christian. Those people out there aren't Christians. And I'm like, it's okay. You know, and it's just like, you know, it's like.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Some students were looking at her weird because it's like, yeah, we get it because we have brains in our heads. And then you have a loudmouth minority who seems to make the whole world suffer. So it's like, I don't know. And it's like, are they a cult? You know, I don't know.
You know, it's interesting, Bill, because since we're kind of sharing now. Personal stories. I, as you know, and I think I've mentioned it on the show before, I guess I still technically am a preacher's kid.
You preachers, I'm throwing acorns at you in the fall.
Bill, I'm going to go smoke a cigarette out behind the church after Sunday school with you. That's what I'm going to do. But, you know, I make no bones about it. It's something that, you know, of course I'm older now, but it's like I don't remember really having a problem talking about it even when I was younger. But you know, it's not something that you'd really talk about because there's more fun stuff to talk about when you're a kid. But I went to Millersville for a spell.
Millersville was like, fuck you, man. I'm like, I'm just kidding, just a joke.
It's actually a beautiful campus, but it could use some updates. I'll just say that. But I met a guy in one of my lit classes really, really articulate, really well spoken, had a sense of humor, really insightful. And we somehow became friends. And he revealed to me early on that he was a born again Christian. Mm-hmm. Yet I could sit there and there were times when we would meet up and just sit and have like lunch or whatever in the middle of the afternoon. And we would just talk for like an hour or 2 hours at a clip about this, that, and the other thing. And at no point did I feel like he was imposing his belief system. Beliefs on me or anything like that. He was just a really well-spoken, philosophical guy, despite the connotations that go with it when someone would just like say, hey, I'm a born-again Christian, which usually clears the room out kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, again, going back to the notions of, you're kind of having a knee-jerk reaction to things, you know, based on your own standing. And, you know, we would have great conversations, and he would even talk about like the horror movies he used to watch before he got quote unquote saved, and the punk music he listened to and all that stuff. So we had a lot of commonalities that we talked about, and I would bring up counterpoints to his arguments, you know, mm-hmm. for Christianity, or uh-huh. having belief in God. And it was just kind of like how you imagine, like, I guess Greek philosophy or Greek philosophers just walking around having conversations, you know, that sort of scenario. And it was nice. It was refreshing. I look back obviously on that time and with fondness, because that he was challenging me. I was probably challenging him, and that was like, but it wasn't like a competition or anything. It just kind of was what it was.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that. I worked with a guy whose name was also Bill. Great guy, awesome. And I didn't know, I think, until like 3-4 months in, and he was a Jehovah's Witness.
Okay.
I was like, dude, you know, like, I've known Jehovah's Witness, and that, like, they became a Jehovah's Witness. They just disappeared because it's like, you're not, you know, the rest of the world wasn't right. And he was like, nope. And he was really cool, and I've met Muslims who were like, you would never know we're Muslims, and you know, the whole nine yards, man. I met Zoroastrians, pagans, Wicca. I mean, the list goes on. And you know what? It all comes down to character. Are you a good person? Are you nice to other people? Then that's cool. And,
yeah.
You know, and I know there's people I don't talk to because it's like you're using your religious beliefs as a weapon, and that's not cool at all. And
that's part of the problem.
Yeah, and that just separates everybody. And, you know, so anytime you say I belong to a particular group, you know, you could say it's cultish. And I remember this one student, man, way freaking back when I was I was a substitute teacher in a high school, in the high school I went to. And this one student was really cool. He was a good kid, listened mm-hmm. to cool music, but he didn't know where he fit, because we've created a society where there are categories. Which one's yours? And that's why I have issues with certain elements of, like, political correctness, because it's like, okay, we're categorizing now, and that's not a good thing. We're not genres of film, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so he didn't know where he belonged for the longest time. He felt lonely and all. Guess who took him?
Who?
Skinheads.
Oh.
So once in a while, he's like, hey, Bill, how you doing? Because he got the look down and everything. I'm like, hey, man, still hating people for no reason? You know, it's like, you know, and then he'd start, like, you know, bashing punks, you know, like, you punks don't know, you know, I'm a skinhead. And I'm like, oh, dude, come on, man. Like, what the fuck you doing, you know? And he's like, take your Doc Martens off the chair in front of you, man. You know, it's like.
Yeah. It's like that line in Green Room. He's like, where Anton Yelchin says to Imogen Poots, how can you fall for that shit?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, there's wily ways to form a cult, you know,
sure.
And, you know, usually give you something that you don't have. And usually it's people who are lost, people who are damaged, or people who are waylaid by unsuspectingly by a sociopath who's exploiting them, and they don't know it until it's too late, like the boiled frog scenario. But, you know, you look at babies, you look at animals in general, It's like they don't know. Like, you could have a baby born, let's say, without arms. The baby's smiling. The baby's happy. The baby's not ashamed. It's not embarrassed. It doesn't know what it's missing. All of that crap, you know? Yeah. And animals, like, you'll see animals in the wild that are wounded or something or had some injury, but they're still moving around and they're not shunned and they don't feel awful. And, you know, they're making an adjustment because they have, like, three legs or something, like, you know, three paws now, whatever. And, but man, as human beings, after a while, once we know, once we're self-aware, you know, we reach that stage as a kid, we're like, oh shit, man, I don't look like that person, and I don't have that they do, and people like them, and they don't like me because I don't, and it's like, and we're just fucked.
Yeah,
you know, we're just all so screwed, and I think that you know, in these horror movies, when you have these cults, it's like, okay, I'm not like them. And they're with a group of people, but they're not a cult. And they're like, we're all individuals. We're hanging out. And it's like, we're in this town now, and they're all the same. You know, and it's just, you just, it's just hyper-reality to a degree, because it's like you automatically feel isolated, ostracized, unsafe. You know, I was in you could spot an American. If you travel abroad, you could spot an American in the summer in a crowd a mile away, and that's the guy usually wearing shorts, because nobody wears shorts in the world except for, like, the United States, mostly ball caps especially, and maybe a NASCAR shirt, you know. And if somebody's wearing a t-shirt, it usually doesn't have a whole bunch of crap on it like we do here, you know. It's like, oh, it's playing spot the Americans pretty, even in Canada you could spot the American. And I I was in France, and this kid was running around in a football jersey and a ball cap, and people were looking at him like, what? Like, where we would see in any, like, you know, we wouldn't even think twice. This French kid's wearing that stuff, and he's walking around town, and he looks like he's from another planet. Yeah. It was really wild, you know, and it's just wild how I, you know, you know, different cultures, how we look at different, how we look at each other differently, and what's right and what's wrong. And you could say it's cultish behavior, but at that point, it's so vast and large, and you're in another country, another world, you know. It's just, I don't know where I'm going with this shit.
Well no, and I think, you know, to bring up my own personal approach to, like, you know, traveling and going to other cultures, Bill, because I think what you're saying is there's that, if you're a foreigner, there's that can be that culture shock, you know. There's a new language. There's a language you're unfamiliar with, unless you've been trying to brush up on it before your trip, kind of, you know. And there is that desire to, like, again, like we were saying, pigeonhole and resist, kind of. Resist what we're encountering. Whereas, you know, when I
number 12 looks just like you.
Yeah, exactly. When I went to, you know, Iceland or Germany or whatever, I kind of tried to hook into the familiar things, like the things that we have in America. But just like, you know, they have hotels, and the hotels look a little like our hotels, kind of thing. You know, of course they have different names. but I was, like, looking for the commonalities, I guess, to kind of rein in that sense of home, even though I was kind of dislocated and everything, and there was that sense of, oh my god, I'm lost. Thank god my friend is here to guide us around, because he has a bloodhound sense of direction. And, you know, but there's that, I chose to be beguiled by the differences, though. You know, oh, this is new, this is interesting, this is, I'm not going to resist this, I'm going to go with it, kind of, you know, because, oh, I'm going to try this because it sounds bizarre, you know, this type of food that I've never heard of before. So I think it comes down to, like, how you, you know, the individual approach to things. And I think what you were saying is, you know, some people get really settled and stuffy kind of in their ways, to the point where they block out everything else. This is my way. This is my approach. Why aren't you doing it this way? Because this is the way.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's what makes it dangerous, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I agree with you. And
we will talk about more movies, folks. We promise.
Yeah, I think we, you know, we're talking about the horrors. I did this one trip once where I went across country and back again, and it was funny. Once I was outside of Chicago, heading towards the Northwest, I drove, I don't know, what was it, 1,200 miles, 1,500, without seeing anyone who was black or Latina or Latino, for that matter, Latin, black Latin or Asian. It freaked me out. Because I'm driving, and I'm like, well, what if I was a woman? You know, I thought of that. I was like, you know, how would I be on this journey, this self-drive all along? Then I was like, well, what if I was a black man? Like, yeah. You know, and I'm like, I shouldn't have these thoughts anywhere. No one should, ever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and like, what if I didn't have, like, you know, what if, I don't know, what if I had some weird symbol on me and somebody thought it was like a religious thing and they didn't get it and they automatically thought I was awful? Happens with names.
Yeah.
Back in 1979, we had the Iran hostage crisis, where Americans at the embassy in Tehran were held captive for 444 days. During that crisis, you know, obviously things weren't good with Iran, you know, things were pretty ugly.
Yeah.
And my father went on a trip to Georgia, and he was a service technician, and he was introducing himself. Hi, I'm Bill Prystock. And the guy stopped, and they're like, Prystock, that ain't Iranian, is it?
Mm.
And my dad's like, fuck. You know, it's like what the hell, man? Come on.
Yeah,
Come on. You know, it's like craziness.
Yeah, and, you know, Bill, that kind of segues into something here. What about a cult that does not have an ideology in a horror movie? Have you ever run into a cult that does not have, like, you don't know really why they're doing what they're doing or what they hope to achieve with what they're doing? Wow. Because I have one.
Oh, good. Well, say it, because I'm stuck, man.
I don't think it's a movie you like, but it's a movie I like.
Oh, crap. Here we go.
Well, and you might not even remember it, but you know Mickey Keating's Ritual, Bill?
Yes.
It's basically the story of a couple that's they've become estranged, kind of, but they're pulled together one night for due to certain extenuating circumstances. Yep. at this hotel, and they find themselves inexplicably, actually not inexplicably because there's a reason, but these skull mask wearing cultists descend upon them at this hotel over the course of the night. And you don't really, you kind of know they want someone for the purpose of the title act. But the closest we get is the fact that there's a guy who talks to the one protagonist at one point and starts talking, I think, about the moon phase or how the moon looks that night. But it doesn't really explain anything. It's just kind of like this throwaway thing, not really, but it's kind of like a weird conversational topic to have with a stranger.
Mm-hmm.
And the film just is basically an escalation of kind of this chase that, you know, transpires over the course of this night. And by the time you reach the end of the movie, you really haven't had anything imparted to you. It's been more about the experience of leading up to that point and kind of being left asking your own questions, I would say. And that's what I like about that movie, because that to me subverts the notion of the cult in a horror movie.
Oh, I agree. And I must say, because I can't avoid it, Lisa Marie Summerscales was lovely in that movie.
She was. Yeah.
That was her name in the movie, Johnny.
Yeah.
I can't take me anywhere, even when we're talking about cults and horror films.
Well, you know, I just thought that was interesting because
there
was another one too, but it might be because of my memory that I don't remember the purpose of the cult. But it was Lord of Illusions. Did
yes!
that Did that cult have a fucking purpose outside of the fact that it was just a cult in that movie?
Dude, it was mayhem, man. It was like Fight Club. Like, let's wreak havoc, man. Clive Barker.
It was just bring about the apocalypse, bring everything fucking down kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, their leader was Nyx. You know, Nyx it all, you know.
Swan.
Daniel Von Bargen.
Yeah. So okay, I felt like they didn't have like a, so it was like the purpose wasn't specific, it was just more chaos kind of, you know, and power kind of thing.
Yeah, I love it, you know. Somebody called him an evil cult leader. It's like, well, that's the point. Like, how many are like, oh, he's a nice cult leader. Like, you don't hear that. Maybe we need more nice cult leaders, Johnny.
You know, Bill, you bring up an interesting point, and this just popped into my head. It's not a horror film, but some people make the argument that it's kind of it is a horror movie in its own way. Have you seen Safe by Todd Haynes?
Safe?
With Julianne Moore?
Oh, wait a minute. Safe, you said, right?
From 95.
Safe from 95.
Not the Jason Statham movie.
No, I did not see Safe, man.
Well, Julianne Moore's character is this vapid housewife, like living in Los Angeles, who becomes convinced that she has this environmental illness. So she kind of doesn't... She decides to go to this out-of-the-way sort of health retreat in the middle of nowhere. And it's led by this guy who's very charming, very down to earth, very assured in his philosophies about the planet and where it's going. And it just sort of builds this oppressive kind of... it's oppressive in a weird way that it's hard to quantify. It's like a horror film, but it's like the way Haynes... writes and directs it is almost objective to a large extent. It's like he's not trying to really steer you towards a specific conclusion with the film, kind of like a Ritual, actually. He's more just kind of like, he's presenting these characters, this progression of events, and Julianne Moore kind of winds up where she winds up, but you're not sure was there really an environmental illness, or was this all in her head because she had nothing else to occupy her head, kind of thing, like a hypochondriac or something like that.
Sounds like Bug a little bit too.
Yeah, it shows that kind of deterioration. You know, both those films show kind of deterioration of their protagonists. You know,
well, it's really funny because, you know, you look at like people who are, you know, have sports teams that they love. You know, that's definitely cultish behavior.
Yeah,
you know,
the fanaticism.
Yeah, where fan comes from, of course. You know, Marvel versus DC. You know, like, you know, you could get that crazy if you wanted to, but I don't think comic book fans are stupid, so that wouldn't happen. And I'm a sports fan. I have my teams, and I have my teams that I don't like. I say I hate, but I'm not going to go to a ballpark and watch the Cleveland Browns take on the Steelers, and I'm going to like look for a Steelers fan to kick his head in. You know, and same thing when I see a Devils Rangers game, I'm not going there to like find a Rangers fan to smash up. You know, I'm going there to watch it. I think it's great to have rivalries, and I also think it's great to go, hey man, your guy won, your team won, whatever, and it's like, yeah, you know, beer's on me, you know, something like that. And it used to be that way from, I remember growing up with presidential candidates and all, you know, my, oh yeah, you know, I owe my buddy a beer because his guy won, and you know, blah, blah. And it wasn't like this freaking insanity that our country has dove into so deep with pure unadulterated hatred for each other, you know, it's just crazy.
Well, again, you go back to Twitter, that's like, you see that shit every day. It's total one-sided bile, you know. But, you know, depending on which side you're on, but it's both sides. Everyone's spitting at each other.
Yeah, instead, everybody's creating problems instead of solving them, which is what they're supposed to be doing. You know, we're all supposed to be doing that. We're all supposed to be helping each other. I mean, it's crazy. So, you know, cults just add I don't know, man. Just had a whole nother element of awfulness, you know? Really, I haven't heard of a good cult, man. I really haven't.
You know, Bill, well, I've got two that I'd be remiss to leave off this show because I think they're pretty exemplary. Instances in horror, because they are unconventional, I think, despite the fact that they are dealing with the subject of cults, which, as we've established, is kind of hard. Not hard, but I think filmmakers often don't challenge themselves to try and make the concept stick out in a mm-hmm. way that, in a unique way. And one is a Canadian film by Maurice Devereaux called End of the Line.
Okay.
Have you seen that one, Bill?
I'm trying to think if I did.
I wonder if I can't remember if I loaned that one to you or not.
I'm gonna find out right now, buddy. Let me go to my master list of awesomeness.
Should I talk a little while you're doing that?
That's a smart move there, Johnny. What was this from? Which one? There was like 2007?
I believe so.
All right.
That sounds about right.
Yeah, I know. I never saw this film.
Okay.
But I want to.
Yeah, you know, I won't say too much about it except that it is kind of apocalyptic in the sense of it's kind of that end times mentality, but you have these people who look like normal people. You know, there's that unassuming quality to the religious people in End of the Line that makes them kind of like, oh, you wouldn't think that that guy would do what he's doing to right. this person now. And it's also a testament to you know, belief systems. How far will people go in the name of what they so strongly believe? And I know we've seen things like, you know, the monk setting himself on fire in protest of Vietnam.
Self-immolation is still do it in Tibet.
Or even going to more extremes of, like, you know, the post 9/11 world of suicide bombers and
self-radicalization. Like, what the fuck is that?
Exactly.
You know, it's like something I just don't understand yet. Maybe I don't want to.
And I mean, the thing with End of the Line is that it presents this world that's like, it presents this definite sense of dread, fear, kind of not knowing what's around the corner. And for a long time, you're actually questioning, is all the stuff that's these religious types are talking about really happening, or is this all just like a collective psychosis sort of thing? Mm-hmm. And I won't say anything about it, but I think it's a really well done movie.
I have to see it, Johnny. I must see it.
Yeah, and the other one, and I think you have issues with this one, Bill, but I think it is unconventional, in part because of who it comes from.
Mm-hmm.
But it's Kevin Smith's Red State.
No. Oh man, Michael Parks friggin' killed it, man.
Oh, his 10-minute monologue near the beginning is genius. It's brilliant.
It really is. Yeah, the only thing I really didn't like about the movie is, like, all he needed to do was take 10 minutes and talk to a cop about how you guys approach, like, a house. That's all he needed to do, and he didn't do it.
Yeah,
lazy research.
Yeah, but I mean, I think where it goes in the third act is, like, I think Kevin Smith said something in an interview about how he wanted to be kind of a joy buzzer effect with mm-hmm. who lives, who survives, and who dies over the course of the siege in that film. And it is really unexpected. It's like you're kind of like, oh, this guy's got to make it, or this girl's got to make it. And it often doesn't play out the way you expect, which is kind of lends it an element of reality. It's like the quote unquote collateral damage when mm-hmm. things start to go south, whether in a domestic situation or in a wartime situation.
Gotcha.
But at the same time, it's like, how do you justify these extreme measures kind of in a kind of domestic situation? So mm-hmm. it's an interesting film. It does have some humor in it, which is very Smithian. I think the dialogue is fantastic.
That's cool.
Yeah.
But the you just reminded me of two more films, and then we could go into Scream Out territory.
Well, and I wanted to close it out with a little something then too, Bill. So
okay,
go
well,
ahead.
Then I'll let you do that. The Invitation from 2015.
Yes, yeah.
Karen Kusama film, which is really wonderful because it's like, all right, what's really going on until the end? Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed that. And you could even say the great movie from way back when, man, Night of the Demon.
Oh, the Danny Andrews movie.
Yeah, way back. What was that, 57? Curse of the Demon? Wait, what the hell am I doing here?
It's one or the other. I thought it was Night of the Demon.
So did I. I think it goes under both titles.
Okay.
Let me just find out and verify for myself here. Yeah, Night of the Demon. It's also called Curse of the Demon. And that's great. You have the Hollywood version of a devil worshiper, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't heard one Satanist or devil worshiper say Hollywood's ever gotten anything right, you know, in regards to that. They like lump them in too, you know. It's like I knew LaVey Satanist. He was a sweetheart, you know. And he's like, I'm a LaVey. I don't want to tell anybody because I'm afraid they'll just kick my ass. And I'm like, I'm like, I get it.
Yeah, you know, it's so cliche. There's all the bullshit with animal sacrifice or, you know, whatever.
Baby
it's...
killing. I heard this one minister on a documentary saying they kill babies and they melt their fat in the candles. And I'm like, it's a conspiracy and nobody knows about this. Yeah, nobody knows about it because it's not happening.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, like, I don't know. So what's your big closeout, Johnny?
Well, you know, Bill, I got to thinking when I know. Don't listen too closely, folks. Form your own opinions. Question authority and all that jazz.
I hate jazz.
I was thinking about Manson, actually. Just the fact that Manson is like sort of the, I hate to say it, like the archetypal cult figure in American culture and history and pop culture, even, because like when we're recording this show, a Once Upon a Time in Hollywood just opened, the Tarantino movie, which features Manson and the family. I haven't seen it yet, but I know they figure into the film somehow. And also later this, actually in September, I think we're getting from Mary Harron, Charlie Says, which is another film about the family. Jim Van Bever did a film like over about 15 years ago at this point called The Manson Family, which is a fantastic but tough to take dramatization of Manson and his disciples.
And Steve Railsback played him best in Helter Skelter way back.
That's true, and there was also another version with Jeremy Davies as Manson back in the early 2000s, I think. But it's just, you know, kind of going back to what you said, Bill, about the real life cults that people kind of find themselves tripping into in a way, or the cult mentality. And I was like thinking to myself, why are we getting at least two movies about Charles Manson, whether directly or indirectly, this year? And maybe on some level, it's incidental, but maybe it is speaking to kind of where we're at.
Yeah, it's not incidental, man.
As a culture, kind of like this one-sided back and forth that's not solving shit. You know, well, this is what breeds these weird intolerant mentalities that oftentimes don't have a basis really in reality.
Exactly.
They're so far removed from anything like Manson and his bullshit about a race war, you know. It's just, but it's like then you kind of look at what we have today and it's like, well, there are factions out there who seem to want to nudge people in directions like that just by provocation alone, you know.
Oh yeah.
It just for anything, just for the slightest little thing, you're canceled, you know. You're booted out, you know, and you're ostracized, and then what do you do? Well, you find some people and you form your own cult. So yeah.
Well, I hear you, Johnny. And
sorry, that was a bad ending to the show.
No. These are people who we're gonna talk about. Some people right now that we're gonna scream out to, not to come join a cult, and they're not forming cults of their own, as far as I know. But I'm not sure when the two shows are going to show up, but I had the honor and pleasure of interviewing Lloyd Kaufman at Tromaville in New York City, and that was really fabulous. So many thanks to Lloyd and his Tony John and Camden who were there. They were very wonderful. Just had a great time with the man. And and Luz from Scranton Films, you know, she was just really wonderful as well. She made it happen, so I'm most grateful for her. She'll be on the show at some point. But you could follow the great Lloyd Kaufman, and this is what he says on for his Twitter post. Nobody knows how to make films and not make any money doing it better than Lloyd Kaufman. Trey Parker, South Park creator, Instagram. and he's in Tromaville. You could follow him and also go to LloydKaufman.com. And other great scream outs too. Where am I? Creepshow TV. And what is that? Creepshow television series coming in 2019 to Shudder. And you could go to the official CreepshowStore.com. So check them out. Don't forget, it's coming. Creepshow TV coming soon. Queen Halloween 1, and that's Wendy Kelly, and she's the queen of Halloween, damn it, and she's at Holidays Halloween Radio, and we love the people at Holidays Halloween as well. Love all things Halloween and horror. 50% darkness, 50% sparkles, and she's out of Knoxville, Tennessee, and that's awesome. And you can find her on Mixcloud at Holidays Halloween. The great TL_Enigma. Who's that? That's TL Brown, damn it. He's a published author and counselor and future psychologist. And you can check out his author page at Amazon.com. He's out of, Framingham, Massachusetts. I was thinking Farmingham, and I was like, no, it isn't, you know. T.L. Brown's a wonderful soul. Please check out the person and follow him. The lovely, the wonderful Sarah. And who is she? She's Sarah Sweets, 83. She's the queen of horror. And she's she says, I'm the devil's daughter. So she, already, Johnny, she fits in with the show.
Awesome.
A lover of horror and gore, pagan witch, and proud. There we go again. It's awesome. And she's really, she's so sweet. She lives up to her name. And she is Bleeding Critic, a.k.a. From the Clown's number one fan. And she also loves Slipknot and Iron Maiden, so fucking A right there, you know? Natalie, who's she? That is Lux Gaze, L-U-X-G-A-Z-E. She's a Toronto-based musician, audio engineer, and sound designer, and that's wonderful. You could find her tracks on Spotify. Pop Horror News, your favorite online horror destination, even if you didn't know it, because I didn't know that it was my favorite, but apparently it is. Horror News, reviews, trailers, interviews, gaming. Every day for us is Halloween. How can you not love them? Wonderful souls. You're out of Haddonfield, Illinois. Go to pophorror.com. Tyler Has Opinions.
Yes.
And who's that? That is My Opinions Man on Twitter. If you don't like it, then that's just like your opinion, man. And that's all you need to know. Go check a lot of film talk, and he's just really fantastic. Grave Reviews. And that's actually Grave Reviews, Inc., I-N-C. Read the latest horror articles and reviews and find haunted attractions near you. Share your nightmares and be sure to subscribe. And you can check out their site at gravereviews.com. They're out of New York as well. And finally tonight, author Ellie, E-L-L-I-E. She's a published horror author of 7 books with more on the way, damn it. She's a really, really cool soul. I like her a lot.
Nice.
And you could check out her site at authorellie.com. And all of her books are at Ellie Books. So there you go. And she's out of Auckland City, New Zealand.
Wow.
All right. So, Johnny, that's all the scream outs for tonight.
Billy, I got one to add here because...
Oh, awesome.
I meant to bring this up earlier in the show, but you know how I get discombobulated.
Why should today be any different?
I blame it on the Kool-Aid mixed with peanut butter mixed with chocolate cookie, but yeah.
Wow, I believe that children are the future, Johnny. There is no future! Sorry, go ahead, man.
There is no case! There never was! Your wife is very concerned. She's not my wife. I don't know who she is. It's all just a big joke. Talk about a cosmic conspiracy cult thing going on in Dark City, man.
I know. I love it.
Longtime listener of the show, Owen McEwen Quest.
Woo!
He incidentally made a tweet today that kind of was like, wow, that kind of ties into what we're talking about. And it goes like this. Sometimes I feel adrift in a sea of weird cliques. Think I'll start my own club. Or cult. Join me? And he posted the gif of Homer Simpson patting the couch, like, join us, kind of.
As long as there's donuts, I'm there, man.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. In any case, you can find me at the cult of personality known as Twitter and Letterboxd under Johnny Num. There are no H's in those Johnnies, but you don't have to do what I say. Put in an H and see what happens. And you can also find my movie reviews at CrashPalaceProductions.com. Billy!
Oh, you could find me on Twitter at Crash Palace. And you could find this show and more on CrashPalaceProductions.com. And if you're so inclined for crime thrillers, you can get my books for free on Kindle Unlimited on Amazon. Just type in the name PRYSTAUK and Bloodletting and Punishment will pop up. And you could welcome them home and share them with loved ones.
Billy gives a damn about craft, so they're definitely worth your time.
Oh, thank you, Johnny. You're too sweet. The check's in the mail, my friend.
Fucking Hard Case Crime needs to pick your shit up, man. That's all I gotta say.
Oh, dude, I would just melt.
I think they would fit so well, and that's all I gotta say on that. Yeah.
Thank you, Johnny. All right, man. So. What the hell?
Think for yourself, Bill, and question authority.
Yeah, whatever you say, Johnny, I'm going to listen to you now after that.
But I'm going to say, don't listen to me. Question that I'm telling you to question authority. How does that sound?
Well, now I don't want to question it because I don't believe what you're telling me.
Fuck it, Bill. You're killing me here. How am I going to get the cult up and running, man? Jesus. The numb ones.
The cult where she sells sanctuary.
By the seashore.
With Ian Astbury on vocals, baby.
I don't even know. Oh, boy.
All right, buddy. Yeah. Good night.
See you, Bill.
Bye.